listening to the Forza Podcast with your host, Marsh.
What up, what up, what up, Canes fans? It's the Forza Podcast coming to you live on this wonderful Friday, August 17th. No, not August. What day is it? The 14th.
14th, yeah.
August. And it's your boy, Marsh. And as always, I am joined by my wonderful producer and co-host, Jordan Nelson. Jordan, end of the week. We're 27 days from kickoff.
Dude, I brought a smile to my face when you said that, man. I just can't wait for football.
How was your vacation?
It was really good. Very relaxing. You know, we went to the lake, the reservoir down there, and had some fun and just caught up on some sleep, man. It was a really good time.
Good deal. Good deal.
Yeah. I went on vacation for a few days to kind of get away from everything, you know, clear my head. I came back last night and then I had a dream about the hurricanes and Miami Twitter and whatever. And I woke up and I was like, man, I needed a longer vacation.
Yeah, it's I'm not gonna lie, like I've been tweet because my phone is broken and I've been using my siblings' phones and my mom's phone to tweet, but other than that, like I haven't had that much social media time, you know, with having no phone, and it has been amazing.
Yeah, I love what we do, you know, interacting with people on Twitter and stuff. You know, but for every handful of people that I really love, there's always a bad apple that kind of ruins things.
You know, that's how it is everywhere. I mean,
yeah,
not it's everyone just, is going to be as nice as most of Hurricane's Twitter, but you know, it's okay. We're just going to keep smiling, going to keep lifting weights, and you know,
you know me. Just trying to be like you, man. Just trying to get those pythons going.
I don't know where my pythons went, but they are gone. They have left me.
I can't get my arms big for some reason. My chest and my shoulders, they bulk up pretty well, but my arms just kind of stay the same what I do.
I'm the opposite. Like when I was like a sophomore in high school and I was getting into lifting, I read that the triceps make up like 70% of your arm. And so I was like, oh, well, I have to lift triceps like four times a week now. And for that, you know, my chest didn't grow. And so like throughout high school and even now, like it looks like my chest is inverted and I walk around like a freak. But yeah, I just got back from Caneswear. It sucked because our boy Brett wasn't there, so I couldn't meet him and talk with him. But we
shout out to Brett though.
Yeah, yeah. But me, my brothers, my mom, we all got way too much crap. Actually, we got so much cane stuff.
That's good, man. That's good. I'm just so excited. Like it's that time of year that, like late summer. There's just a smell in the air, at least in Utah, as summer's winding down and you know, fall is approaching.
Mm-hmm.
And whenever I can smell that, like,
it's football season.
Oh, dude. And it's a special feeling, man. It, like, gives me the jitters. Like, I want to start jumping up and down and, like, get hyped because I know that it's, you know, my favorite time of the year is just weeks away. I just can't wait, dude.
I know. I'm so excited. I'm so excited. And I'm very excited about tonight's show because we got two great guests for you guys. We got friend of the program, John Michaels, coming on first. And then first time on the show, head coach Mike Manasco from Palmetto High School here in Miami, who I don't know if you guys have heard, but he has a lot of good players, some of them.
Yeah.
So I am excited. I am so freaking stoked for this show. I am about that with every show, but I'm very excited about tonight. So what do you say we get John on the phone?
Yeah, for sure. Let me patch him in real quick.
Yo, yo.
John, what's up, man?
What's up, guys?
John Michaels, friend of the very good friend of the program. Long time no talk. How you doing, brother?
Doing great, man. How you guys doing?
We're doing good. We're doing good.
And I'm just enjoying the sun down here in South Florida. Too bad you're not down here.
One of these days, more like 7 years from now, when our kids finally graduate high school, I'm getting the hell out of here. I got three of them. One of them's in 10th grade. One of them's in 7th. One's in 6th. Kane's the youngest. As soon as he gets his ass out of high school, I'm done with Georgia. Because then me and the wife can buy a condo, hang out on the beach. You know, I've slimmed down, but I could get fat again if I go back to South Florida because I'm married and my wife looks too good for me anyway. So, yeah, 7 years and I'm getting the hell out of here.
Bro, I'm all red, dude. Anytime I come down here, I swear I gain like 20 pounds. It's the food here rivals like anywhere in the country.
Yeah, it's New Orleans. I mean, if you've ever been to New Orleans, oh, my goodness. You go to New Orleans and you've got to eat two or three po' boys and a pot of shrimp gumbo. And it's just people with etouffee and something with rice. And the next thing you know, you come home and go, how'd I gain 8 pounds? Like, I was there for 3 days. What the hell just happened? But Miami's exactly the same way.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Well, let's start off. You just started a new podcast, The State of Miami. How's that going?
So far, so good. Really appreciate, you know, everybody that's tuned in and listened. I'm kind of blown away with some of the numbers that I've been getting on there and some of the reaction that I'm getting. It's something that, quite frankly, I should have started about 4 or 5 years ago. But, you know, when you're working in radio, a lot of times you get done doing radio. And the last thing you want to do is come home and do more radio. So while I'm doing radio now, you know, doing some national stuff for Sports Map Nation. It used to be SB Nation. It's now Sports Map Radio. They just rebranded and put a new name on there. You know, I'm not doing as much locally as I had been. So I love it. I get to talk about Miami. I talk trash, you know, and I'll tell anybody, I'm going to keep it as real as they come with 40 years of fandom and three-fourths crazy, which is like how I like to think of myself. You know, I just go on there and let it fly. And half the time I have an idea what I want to talk about. And it turns into just storytelling and, you know, thinking back to the days of being a fan and just enjoying what the University of Miami's brought to my life.
Absolutely. Dude, I've been telling people, and I actually had someone, a good family friend, he's a Canes fan. He's big into local radio down here. He goes like, dude, you and John Michaels just need a show on 790 or 560. And I'm like, well, hell yeah, we do.
I would love it. I'll be honest. I have spoken with the program director of 790 or 560 multiple times. The timing's never been right. And unfortunately, right now, you've seen it. If you read anywhere, every major radio entity is literally just whacking everybody. They're firing everybody. And that's what I'm waiting on here locally. You know, I've got two different stations potentially that want me, but neither one of them are hiring. And they're like, well, John, you just got to be patient. I'm like, patient don't pay my fucking bills. So the first person that comes with a job, I'm taking the job and going from there. But no, State of Miami's awesome. You know, I'm going to do the shameless plug. Edit by AB hooked me up, made a couple of designs. I put them on t-shirts. The Lashley King 20 shirt, it's got the little State of Miami podcast logo right underneath it. I think that's going to be a hot seller. I've had people buying those. And I think as soon as we go out and put up a 40-point game, those are going to start flying off the shelves.
Yeah, man.
I love it, bro. Hey, you've always been good to us. So whenever, like, if you want to plug your show in, we are more than happy to help you out, bro.
Absolutely. And I'm glad that you plugged AB. AB is one of my dudes. And, dude, he's incredible, isn't he? He's so talented.
Yeah, he reached out to me. I don't know. When I first announced the, you know, and just put the Twitter page up, he goes, man, I saw the name and I just made this and, you know, I'll do it for you. He goes, you know, I normally charge people to do these type of graphics and whatnot. He goes, but I just want this one out there. Now, don't get me wrong. I paid for the other one and he's hooking up one that's going to say scared money don't make money, which is kind of the motto of my podcast. But, oh, that dude does incredible work and it's top notch. And he turns it around in like a day.
Oh, it's incredible.
So,
yeah.
Yes. So he's really cool with what he does.
Yeah, he's done work for me. So he did I had a Star Wars podcast that I was working on before the stuff happened with Slam Radio. That kind of had to get pushed to the back burner because I don't have any time at all to work on that right now. I'm, you know, too busy with Fours Up and then Slam. But he did our edit for Slam. He's, you know, done stuff with Fours Up. He helped me out personally with like that Star Wars thing I was going to do. It's just incredible, man. He's very talented. And like you said, it's always like 30 minutes after I ask for it, I get like an incredible piece of artwork back from him.
Yeah. And it's awesome what you guys are doing on Slam. Amigo's my dude. I remember when it was Armando and Amigo and I have no idea what channel they were on. I met him. I met Larry. What was it? 12 years ago, whenever Hard Knocks was in Miami, the show that I was doing here in Atlanta was like, John, you grew up a Dolphin fan. we're sending, you know, HBO pays for shit like this. They said, we're going to send you down. You're going to do the show for 3 days from Dolphins training camp and just have a great time. And I was right next to Armando, or it was Mondo and the Migo. I forgot. I think it was Armando and the Migo or whatever the name of the show was. But we sat in BS and they saw my Miami tattoos and they were like, what the fuck are you doing in Atlanta? And I said, well, that's just where I do radio and where I live. And we've always connected from there. And he's a great resource. What he's doing there is really, really cool to help out and get guys on the air that deserve a chance to get on the air.
Absolutely. Absolutely, brother. Okay. So, well, let's talk some Canes, man. We kick off in 27 days and it looks like the rest of the country, you know, the other conferences, Big Ten, Pac-12, they're doing their shit. But we at least are kicking off in 27 days. How are you feeling?
I'm awesome. I feel great. You know, obviously, every day that goes by, I open up social media and I'm like, all right, we're still playing. And I see Canes football going, all right, there's our practice pictures and we're in pads and we're hitting. You know, I'm still nervous that something's going to happen where people are going to get spooked and pull the plug. You know, I'm a guy that from day one, I said, we're going to play football. They'll find a way. And I'm shocked. I actually wrote a piece for Barrett Sports Media today saying college landscape and college media has changed forever. Like it's something that's, you know, not going to be the same ever again. And obviously, with the way that this is looking, you know, I look at Miami and go, fuck, 27 days, I hope we play. UAB is actually going to be a tough opener because they're a well-coached team. They're a team that's got 18 returning starters back. I actually did TV for the last game they played before the program shut down. And Bill Clark is a tremendous coach. Now, if we lose that game, Manny Diaz is done. He can go ahead and pack his shit and get the hell out of town. But it's a game that should be a nice opener for Lashley and King, and I cannot wait for that game to kick off on Thursday night.
Yeah, absolutely. And Jordan and I said the same thing, you know, when we previewed the first half of the season the other day. Like, UAB, they went 9-5 last year. They've been in back-to-back conference championship games. They're not a bad – this isn't Bethune-Cookman, you know. We're not playing FAMU. And so I wanted to ask you about Louisville. Does that game scare you at all?
You know, none of the games scare. I mean, Clemson's the one game that scares me. You look at Clemson and you go, okay, we don't have the talent of Clemson. And that's not an indictment on the players we have on our team. It's not as good as it's Clemson. I looked at Dan Enos. We put 60 points on them or 50 some odd points on them a year ago. I forgot what the final score was, 56-27, somewhere in there. We put a lot of points on. Defensively, they're dreadful. Now, offensively, Scott Satterfield has always run a great system. You can go back to his time at Appalachian State. You know, remember that game? We beat the hell out of them, but there were some moments where they were really moving the football. Yeah. And Tutu Atwell's one of the best players in all of college football. I think it's Javonnie Hawkins. I'm trying to remember the name of the running back they have. He's a 1,200-yard back. I mean, Atwell caught a 3-yard drag against us and turned up the field and housed it for about 75. So he's a kid that we never should have let get out of South Florida, but that's a different story for a different day. That's a game you better have your big boy pants on, and I'm actually happy that we have a pretty good opener. You know, you look at UAB, you should probably win that game by 3 touchdowns. It should be 38-17, 31-10, somewhere in there. But it's not going to be the cakewalk that you just talked about with Bethune-Cookman, and it should get you revved up and ready to go against Louisville.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more with what you're saying. It does worry me. Because last season we lost to teams that are worse than UAB, which does scare me going into that game. I guess I'm using the word scare pretty liberally there. But like you said, you know, we do have a pretty tough beginning to the season. And then after Louisville, we go right into a rivalry game. And then we have Clemson right after that. So
Here's the thing I say about this season, and you can really look across the 68 or so teams that are going to play. We're going to know who's good and who's bad. Like I thought about when they changed our schedule, and I think the ESPN FPI had us winning 4.7 games this year, which I laugh at. It's like, you know, take that computer and shove it up your ass. That computer doesn't know a damn thing.
I was listening to 790. Didn't mean to cut you off, but they said that ESPN gave us a 30% chance to win 6 games.
Yeah, it's It's nuts. And, you know, that's a computer that puts in a lot of data from a year ago. I don't think it can factor in an offensive coordinator change, you know, a QB change. There's no way you can look at our team now and think we're going to be worse than we were a year ago without having hater glasses on. But back to my point with what I was talking about, you're going to know who really is good or not. Because think where our schedule was to where it is now. We would have been 3-0 without really breaking a sweat. UAB would have been sort of a challenge. Temple, we should have kicked their ass. Honestly, I don't even know where Wagner is, which is crazy for somebody that loves this college football the way I do. And then you were going to go to Michigan State, and I know everybody was afraid. We were going to beat the shit out of Michigan State. I'm here to tell you, I went to a Michigan State game 2 years ago, and they looked like JV compared to even our team, which wasn't very good that year. They're slow. They were breaking in a new coach. They didn't play offense. So we'd have been 4-0 without breaking a sweat. And you'd have got the 4-0, and everybody would have said, all right, Miami, you know, immediately, Miami's back. How good are the Canes? We'd have been like 19th or 18th just because we were 4-0. Now, by the time we hit week 4, we're going to know whether we're good or not. We could be 1-3 and going, okay, we weren't very good. Or we could be 3-1. And truthfully, I said on Hockman and Crowder, we're not beating Clemson. You know, barring Trevor Lawrence to having a last-minute change of heart and deciding to go to the NFL, we're not going to beat them in Clemson. But if we're 3-1 and we beat Louisville and Florida State, man, I'm going to feel good about myself. Absolutely.
I mean, especially if that scenario plays out, we're 3-1. And let's say that we, you know, we lose 38-24 at Clemson. I'm feeling great, man. I really am. And I think we'd be ranked around 15th. You know, if we can give Clemson a game, you know, I mean, I'm not even going to say that we'll make it like a close one possession game. But if we keep them honest, you know, into the fourth quarter, dude, I couldn't ask for more than that.
No, and I think you get to Clemson. If you're 3-0 when you get to Clemson, I think the one place that they gave us really a good, you know, a good break is that we have a bye week after Florida State. So either if you're really high and you win the game, which we're going to win the game, and you beat them and you feel great about yourself, all right, Manny has that time to kind of let them decompress. And I think everything's going to be so different, obviously, with the virus, and you're not going to be on campus having everybody pat you on the back. Or if you are, it's going to be, you know, the virtual pat from 6 feet away, and you're going to keep walking. He's going to have time to get them to decompress. And then the fact that you have Clemson right after that, you know, think about the games that we lost off a bye last year. We lose the FIU off a bye because guys didn't give a shit. You know, we lost to North Carolina after the Florida game. That's a game we should win by 3 touchdowns. But guys were, you know, I don't know if they just thought, hey, we're the U and we're going to walk up there. I think the fact that you're going to be able to focus on Clemson makes it a really, really good spot for us.
Yeah, absolutely. Okay, so next question I have for you is, so obviously Greg Rousseau is going to the NFL. That's, you know, we've talked about it a lot on this show, and it's on the timeline everywhere you go. How do you feel now about the Canes defensive line moving forward this year without Gregory Rousseau?
I'm going to steal a line from my favorite movie, Remember the Titans. You don't, instead of saying you don't replace a Gary Bertier, you don't replace Gregory Rousseau. You don't get 15 and a half sacks unless you're Vic Beasley. You don't get 15 and a half sacks by accident. You know, Greg Rousseau was the best pass rusher not named Chase Young in college football a year ago. And it's a shame our staff couldn't realize maybe before week 5 that the kid should be starting over Scott Patchen. But you sit behind him and Quincy Roche, how good does that feel that guy's on your team now? You got to feel great about that. So this is a kid that had 13 and a half sacks. Then all of a sudden you slide in Jalen Phillips from the time he's gotten to Miami at 220 pounds to where he is now at about 270. Looks like a totally different kid. And folks love to downplay him. Oh, he was just on the West Coast. He was the number one recruit in the country. Nobody was higher. You know, the last time we had that guy from the West Coast, his name was DJ Williams. And now he's got an awesome brand of clothes after a nice NFL career and a great college career at Miami. That kid's got something to prove. Like, he's a dude that was literally like a quarter of an inch away from retiring from football forever. And he's now got a second lease on life. And he's going to get a chance from day one to be your starting DN. The young kids, obviously, I'm super excited about Harvey. all the Williams kids, Blissett, you know, you name it. My fear, obviously, is defensive tackle. I need to see Nesta Silvera go from prospect name to, all right, bro, it's time to produce. Like, I purposely did on State of the U, my player profile on him, because I wanted to call – it's not calling him out because I think the kid's a great ambassador for the program. It's time to produce. You're a junior. Mark Pope, it's time to produce. You're a junior. Gervin Hall, it's time to produce. It's your second year starting. Like, that's why I chose the guys to write about that I did, because I think the D tackles, the best thing for them, there's no attention paid to them. Everybody's going to go, all right, we got a chip potentially with a fullback or tight end, and guys like Nesta are going to be able to do. And I said, if they could play like RJ McIntosh and Kendrick Norton did 3 years ago, watch McIntosh, how he was so quick off the ball and could turn and make himself skinny and get between the guard and the center and be in the backfield. And the thing with that, people love to go, oh, he didn't get sacks. If I get my D tackle in the backfield, where a back, instead of being able to hit the hole going full speed, has to sidestep and slow down, guess what? My linebackers are there to make the play. I need my D tackles to live in the backfield, but we'll be fine. If there's a place we could afford to lose a guy like Gregory Russo, it was at D end.
Absolutely. Yeah. And I wanted to mention just a few things from that. So obviously, you know, I was part of the media availability a few nights ago when we had Coach Stroud talk to us and also Jalen Phillips talk to us. And I liked how you mentioned that line from Remember the Titans, because Jalen said something about that, or he like talked about Greg Russo. He said, you know, I'm not trying to be the next Greg Russo. You know, I can't fill his shoes. And so, like, I think you bring up a very good point. That's like Brock Berling trying to replace Ken Dorsey or be the next Ken Dorsey. We don't need Jalen Phillips to be the next Gregory Rousseau. We just need him to be what, you know, he is. And Coach Stroud said, I still can't get over this quote. He said that Jalen Phillips is in the 99th percentile of any player I have ever coached in terms of physical attributes. And remember, Coach Stroud coached a guy named Mario Williams, who's the number one draft pick in the NFL back in 06. But, you know, Jordan and I are – we've talked a lot about the defensive tackles on this show, and we – you know, I'm right there with you. Nesta and also, you know, a guy like Mark Pope, you know, they came in with such fanfare, such hype that it just had – that people have such high expectations, and this has to be the year that Nesta – steps up. He's healthy. You know, obviously he suffered an injury during fall camp last year, but he's healthy and he's got to, you know, it has to meet the hype this year.
It does. And, you know, especially when you look and go, all right, Leonard Taylor's coming a year from now. He's going to come take a job from you. You know, you look at the kids that they brought in the past couple of years. These kids are hungry to play football. They look like Miami players. And Nesta looks like a Miami player. The difference is when you used to get to Miami, you knew you weren't playing for 2 years. Like, unless you were Vince Wilfork, where you're, you know, and Vince should be an NFL Hall of Famer before it's all said and done. You know, Vince walked in at 320 pounds. It was just a different type of dude. Remember, DJ didn't start. Number one recruit in the country. No, bro, go play fullback. You ain't good enough to play linebacker here at the University of Miami. Jonathan Vilma didn't start as a freshman. He had to sit. That's the problem. Nesta had to get playing time. Yeah. And I think the injury last year really killed him. If he's healthy all year, we're probably talking about Nesta being a five-sack guy and a guy that lives in the backfield. Because you could see the lights started to come on last year against Florida State. He started getting into the backfield more. And now all of a sudden they've said, and I saw the reports today, he's kept his fat down, which is huge. He's kept his weight in check. And if you can do that, and now all of a sudden you're going to get a lot of single teams with guards, use that speed, use that quickness, get in the backfield. And if you can be a disruptor, man, John Ford, just eat up blocks. Just go get a guy that takes on a double team. I know it's not glorious, but that's a way you can pave yourself into the NFL as well.
Yeah, and I like what you were saying a moment ago about, you know, how just getting into the backfield is important. You know, there's not really a stat for that. But essentially it's the same thing as what point guards do for the rest of the offense in basketball. You know, it is the defense, you know, the D tackles crashing that interior line. It just makes everything else on the defense work.
You know, I was lucky enough to cover Grady Jarrett for his time here in Atlanta. He's still here, obviously one of the great D tackles in the league. And the ability for him to get in the backfield, and it can't be overstated. A QB loves to get to his fifth or seventh step and then start climbing in the pocket a step or two here. And I know today's day and age is different than what we saw out of Marino and Kozar and guys that would take these long ass drops and then climb in the pocket. But even if you're in the shotgun, the hardest way for a quarterback to step and throw is when you have interior pressure. And I use Grady for an example. When the Falcons are able to beat the Saints, it's because Grady lives in Drew Brees' lap. Drew Brees is a short setter. It's 3 and 5 steps and the ball is out of there. Grady has that innate ability to get in the backfield. You can even go back to the Super Bowl that, fuck, we should have won. Grady had 3.5 sacks in that game against Tom Brady. I don't need Nesta to be the guy that's giving me 3 sacks, but make the quarterback take a step to the side. Make a quarterback maybe retreat where he's throwing off his back foot. That makes for inaccurate passes, and it makes for linebackers and defensive backs being able to close on a ball and come up with an interception instead of it being a completion.
Yep, and it just, I mean, it frees up our defensive ends to get the sacks, right? You know, the more athletic guys to, I mean, create, if the interior of the line is getting blown up and, you know, they're creating havoc, then those athletic edge rushers, I mean, they're just going to eat, man. They're going to get so many sacks they won't know what to do with themselves.
Without a doubt. And you think about how many times, like, our DNs come roaring around the edge or we go safety pressure or backer pressure, and the quarterback has to slide up. Well, if you're the guy that's made that penetration, now a quarterback comes right into your lap and you just beat the shit out of him.
Yep. Yeah. Oh, man, I'm excited. So, excited, John, to watch that.
You live in Georgia, and so you probably are around Bulldog fans a lot. When James Williams announced that he was coming to Miami, what was the reaction like?
They were disappointed, but, you know, it's so different right now, I think, partly because of everything that's going on. You know, we live recruiting right now through social media. Georgia fans were disappointed, but I think they were more disappointed. And if you read the message boards, they were more disappointed that Williams had been on campus in Athens that Sunday and literally the next day decided, I'm going to Miami. I'll be honest, I was shocked. I thought for sure. I talked with Rusty Mansell of 24/7 Sports, and he was like, James Williams is a lock. He's coming to Georgia. So I don't know what happened in those 48 hours being up here or if nobody really had a read on the kid. Dogs fans are disappointed, but, you know, for them, they're more disappointed that you're now going to year 5 of Kirby Smart and you're still sitting in the same spot that you were with Mark Richt. You're good. You're better than they were with Mark Richt. I mean, they're a perennial top 7 team right now, and they're pulling in top 4 or 5 classes every year. But eventually, you got to win some games. You got to win – not win some games, you got to win the game. You've got to beat Alabama.
Yeah.
And, you know, this year they play at Alabama during the regular season, which is going to leave them zero room for error. So, you know, they're not disappointed because they're still pulling in top 5 classes, but they are because James Williams is just that dude.
Yeah, he's incredible. I mean, I really think he was, like, the most important recruit that Miami needed to get. And if we're able to keep him, man, it's – the biggest win for Manny Diaz in his career as a head coach so far.
I think him and Leonard Taylor and Brashad Smith and Romello Brinson, those kids are staying. Yeah. And it can't be understated. You know, this, I hate to use the pandemic helped us, but man, this pandemic has helped us.
it really has.
People are afraid. Families are afraid to let their kids leave. You know, I'm a little different. If my kids were in college right now, go back. I wish they would let our kids go back to school right now. And I know people get really mad about that. I've just never lived my life in fear. We wear a mask when we need to go out. I still play in 2 football leagues. I'm still out playing basketball. My jobs haven't stopped. You know, anywhere that I have to go outside to work, I've been there. But I think because of the pandemic, you have kids that want to stay. And the fact that you have James Williams already shit-talking Florida fans, man, I don't know what jersey number he's going to wear when he gets to Miami. But, man, I haven't bought a jersey in about 15 years. I am getting a James Williams jersey because he has put those corny-ass Florida fans in their place. And, you know, I hated that they got Jason Marshall and Corey Collier. Best of luck to those kids going up there. But they look like such hypocrites because they start talking about, we didn't want Leonard Taylor. He wasn't a take. Get the fuck out of here.
Leonard Taylor's
the best defensive tackle in football. He's a take. He's a take in the NFL right now. So don't tell me the kid's not a take. No. You know, tell me James Williams will never play safety. How are you going to tell a kid where he's going to play and where he's not going to play? Go watch some of the drills of him in these 7-on-7 camps when at 6'5", 220 pounds, he's the fastest, most fluid athlete out there. And tell me why now I have to put him at linebacker, because that's where some dork Florida fan thinks he belongs. That program has such an inflated self-worth right now. Dan Mullen's a good coach. And he's a good coach. You don't win 11 games by accident in the SEC. If they think they're winning national championships with Dan Mullen, they've lost every bit of their fucking mind. He'll never beat Nick Saban. He'll never beat Kirby Smart. He'll never beat fucking Ed Orgeron. The dude he's a good coach. He's not an elite coach. And he thinks he's better than he is with his dork-ass pleated pants and Jordans. Bro, get a fucking clue. They'll never, I'm telling you now, Dan Mullen there, put that shit on the record. They will never win a national championship with that dude at head coach.
Bro, you have me dying right now. I am rolling around. Oh, my God.
But am I lying about who they are? You would think that they've come off 5 national titles in a row the way they talk. Georgia has kicked your ass the last 3 years. LSU went up and down the field, and that now Kyle Trask is the end-all, be-all.
Yeah.
Dude, they were great. Think about when they won their championships. They had a once-in-a-lifetime quarterback in Tim Tebow. And I know Chris Leak started as a true freshman, but the second time they won, it was their third championship, but the second time under Urban, you had a once-in-a-lifetime quarterback in Tim Tebow. And when you won in 96, you had one of the greatest college passers ever in Danny Werfel. And truthfully, if Arizona State doesn't blow a fourth quarter touchdown to Joe Germain, Florida doesn't win the national title. Arizona State would have been your national champion. And quite frankly, they never should have got a second shot at Florida State. But that's a whole different story. They don't that guy.
And also, I mean, the fact that they had Urban Meyer, I know a lot of people, you know, have – their opinions on Urban Meyer, but he truly is one of the best coaches in college football history. And so that didn't help them. You know, I mean, that didn't hurt them in 06 and 08 when they were winning. So I could not agree more. I've spent way too much time as it is arguing with those dorks.
Yeah, you have. I try to text you every now and then, like, it's not worth it. I do the same thing to Hugh Douglas here. Hugh is my guy. He'll get on social media and start arguing with a guy with 9 followers. I'm like, Hugh, you made like $80 million in the NFL. Why are you arguing with some guy that's in his basement with no pants on? Like, come on. Let that guy be.
I'm maturing. I just get feisty and I feel like I have to respond, but I'm getting better. I feel like.
No, you know what? Trust me, I've gone through, and there's still times I do right now. And I've had whoever the guy was that called me a twat the other day. All right, bro, I got your twat. You know, that's real simple. Tell me that next time you see me in Miami. Exactly. I have my opinion. Oh, like my opinion. There's the unfollow button. I don't give a shit. If I got 10 followers, I got 20,000. It doesn't make me a difference. And that Harrison dork kid that everybody's killed for some of his takes, he's a guy that you just like to hang on a hook and stick him in a gym locker. Like, that's where he belongs.
Yeah. No, I couldn't agree more, man. And you know, one of my favorite tidbits that I just learned the other day was that Kyle Trask was a career backup to D'Eriq King in high school, which is just perfect. I mean, that is so poetic. You know, just I love it. It's my favorite thing about this football season right now.
It's crazy. He never started a game in his life, or at least in his major life, until the week after Felipe Franks got hurt against Kentucky. So, you know, they found lightning in a bottle, no doubt. And I like Kyle Trask. I think the kid can play. But, you know, to think again, do we really think Kyle Trask is a national champion quarterback? Come on, man. No, and you lost Greenard. You lost, you know, they lost a ton of pieces on defense. I can't wait to see Florida crash back down to earth with 3 or 4 losses this year. And I heard rumors. I don't, you know, they're unsubstantiated. But I heard rumors that they wind their way out of not having to play Alabama. Because originally the way the SEC's 2 new crossover games were going to work, they were just going to take who your crossover game was set to be in 2021, and they were going to add those 2 this year. The rumor is that Florida didn't like that idea because they would have had to then play Alabama, LSU, Georgia, and I forgot who the fourth crossover or the other crossover game is from the West. But, you know, that 3 there, you might have 3 losses on your schedule right then.
Yep. Hey, John, we loved having you on, man. You're welcome on the show anytime. Unfortunately, we gotta get to our next guest. But dude, thank you so much for coming on. Go ahead and plug your stuff again before we send you packing.
Man, the easiest place to find me, John Michaels U on Twitter. Follow me there at State of Miami Pod is the podcast page. We're on iTunes, Google Pod, Spotify, whatever it may be. And I have to reciprocate. You guys got to come on mine as well. And I think one of you tweeted this the other day, and I couldn't agree anymore. I know there's times that people like to be competitive and there's beef amongst podcasts. Fuck that. We can all eat. There's a Canes Nation across the country. Stop hating on other people's podcasts. Go on there, rep your shit, have a great time. And guys, thank you for having me on as always.
Agreed, man.
And I wanted to just quickly say, I really, I probably already told you this, but, when you stepped in for me after my whole dad situation and, you guys did the Dan Cilio interview, I really appreciated that. So thank you very much for that, brother.
Yep.
Thanks, dude. Anytime, man. Anytime.
Okay. Thanks, right. man. Go Canes.
All right, guys.
All right. So we're running a little bit behind with Coach Manasco. So I'm going to call him in right now before we, talk about, that, if that's cool. Hello.
Hello.
Coach, hey, how are you?
Good. How are you?
Pretty good. So we now welcome on Mike Manasco, head football coach for Miami Palmetto High School. If you guys don't know, we have a few players from his team committed to Miami right now. Thank you so much for coming on, Coach.
Awesome, man. Glad to be here.
Awesome. Cool. So I wanted to just ask you first. So you graduated from Palmetto High School. Is that correct?
Yeah, class of 97.
Okay. So for the past few years, what's it been like coaching for your alma mater?
It's been surreal, man. It's been good to get back into the neighborhoods that, you know, I grew up in and be around, you know, I've been coaching a lot of the kids that I played with their moms and dads. So it's been a lot of fun. It's been good, you know, building the program back and, you know, really hoping to take it to heights it's never been.
Well, I mean, you guys are obviously doing a tremendous job right now. We wanted to ask you about some of those players. You know, obviously Miami fans, you know, we were sad that we couldn't, you know, land Jason Marshall and Corey Collier. Best of luck to those guys. We know that they are going to kill it. But we wanted to go through each of the three guys that are committed to Miami right now. So let's start with Leonard Taylor, you know, 5-star defensive tackle, who's the most recent to give his pledge to the 2021 class for Miami. In your opinion, as a coach, what separates Leonard from other defensive tackles and makes him such an incredible, you know, player and such a highly touted recruit?
You know, you don't get guys with his size and his athleticism at the high school level that often. So, you know, just him being 6'4" and a half, 6'5", and he's up to 290 right now. I mean, he's just blown up. You know, just his athleticism, his hips, his feet, his hands, his drive to want to be better. He's very, very coachable, great kid. You know, he's a kid that I would let babysit my kids. He's that kind of young man.
Yeah. So Marsh and I have, you know, discussed at length. We're very excited about having Leonard in this class. One of the things that sticks out is the sack numbers that he posts. You don't see that a lot from defensive tackles. And, you know, we've compared him to, you know, obviously a big comparison to live up to, but we've compared him to Warren Sapp, and that athleticism, his ability to get to the quarterback and get those sack numbers from the defensive tackle position. I mean, do you see that kind of ceiling in a player like Leonard?
Oh, absolutely. You know, he could play all 9 techs up front on the defensive line. He's not going to be a kid that's going to be stuck as a 3 technique or a 2-eye. He's a guy you can move all the way to a wide 9 and come off the edge just because he has that type of length and athleticism. He's really like one of the first D linemen that I've had that can dominate anywhere you put him on the field. I mean, he can do that at any level. I mean, he's a kid that'll play on Sunday.
Oh, we love to hear that, man. I can't tell you how happy we are that he and the two other guys that we're going to talk about are coming to play for the Hurricanes. So let's move to Savion Collins, you know, the other defensive tackle and one of the longest commits Miami has had in their 2021 class. I feel that not many Canes fans know enough about Collins as a player because, you know, he's probably, I mean, he's a little bit more quiet than Leonard because Leonard has had all this hype in the past few months. Why don't you talk about Savion Collins a little bit? Because he's a bigger guy than Leonard Taylor. What makes him so disruptive at DT?
You know, well, first of all, you know, with Savion, just going back to the whole process of who he is very quiet. He's very reserved. He's very mature. You know, he's not a guy that's going to do a bunch of interviews. He's not a guy that's going to post a bunch of stuff on social media. You know, when we got Savion, he came over to our program last summer. You know, he was by far my most improved defensive player throughout the season. He just caught on to our culture and the way that we do things. And by the end of the season, I mean, he was one of the most dominating kids we had. And then, you know, from January to March, when we got to work out with the kids, he was just an animal. I mean, this spring would have been so big for Savion, you know, if we would have had it. But I mean, with his, you know, he's a kid, you probably guys don't know this, but you could put him in a 40-yard dash and he'd run a 4.8 on a laser at 325 pounds.
Jeez.
Like he can fly. You know, he's not quite as athletic as Leonard moving, you know, side to side, but you know, he's got that burst up the middle that you need. Whereas Savion will stay at that 0-1, 2-3 technique and just dominate. I mean, you watch him. I mean, he blows blocks up and he's getting so much more physical with his hands. Being with Leonard has really helped him a lot, you know, because Savion didn't grow up playing football. Leonard did. And so, you know, once Savion started playing in the ninth grade, you know, he was just a big kid. And then now he's starting to be just a grown man. I mean, his upside's tremendous.
Yeah, well, it sounds like their play styles are fairly complementary to each other. And, you know, I'm hoping that our defensive line looks similar to the one that you have in a few years. You know, it'd be great to see those two playing together, you know, starting right next to each other on the D-line and for the Hurricanes in 3 or 4 years. So very excited about that, man.
So when we talked about, you know, when we talk about Leonard Taylor, obviously his pass rushing skills stand out as a defensive tackle. When you look at a guy like Savion Collins, what do you think his biggest strengths are at that position?
He's very explosive out of his hips. His punch is tremendous. I mean, he's going to be a guy that's not going to get blown back. You know, when he plays with leverage and he plays with a flat back, he's unblockable. You know, he needs to be in the environment that Miami's going to create for him, where he's going to compete every single day in practice to play. And then Saturday should just be a lot of fun for him. I mean, because, you know, there's no high school offensive lineman that's blocking that kid.
So when you look at, you know, a Manny Diaz defense, how well do you see those two guys fitting in to that kind of scheme?
I love what Manny does. You know, Manny's a friend, and, you know, his attacking style, especially from what he wants from his interior defensive lineman, just fit perfectly with what Leonard and Savion can do. I know Leonard's going to play some end for, you know, at some point, but the same thing. I mean, Manny appears, you know, pins their ears back and lets them go. And you know, these are the type of kids that are going to flourish in that system.
That's awesome. That's awesome. And so the third guy that we want to talk about is Breshard Smith, and who, you know, and all of Twitter knows I'm a huge, huge fan of. And I've talked about him on this podcast and I've written articles about him. What makes Breshard such a dynamic playmaker, and why should Miami fans be so excited about him?
You know, it's funny. That's how I came to hear about you, you know, because since I've had Breshard as a freshman, I've been telling every college in the country he's the best offensive player in Dade County. He just needs time to grow and get bigger. And he has. I mean, he has filled out. I mean, the speed's always been there. Breshard, you know, he's a guy that can hit a home run every time he's on the field. You know, he can take it the distance. He's got great football IQ. We line him up all over the field. You know, Rhett Lashley's just going to have a fun time putting him in different spots and finding ways to get him the ball, you know, because that's it. I mean, offense is not that complicated. Just get the ball to Breshard Smith. You know, he is that kind of player.
Cool. Love hearing that, man. Marsh always compares him to, he calls him Jeff Thomas 2.0. Just that alone is very exciting to us, you know, especially when Thomas got here as a freshman, man. He lit everything up. So if you know, Breshard can give us some of that, we're not going to complain about it at all, man.
I just to say, Breshard will give you more. I mean, he's got the body. He's got 190 pounds, 185 pounds on him already, and that's without a college weight room. That's without a college meal plan. You know, just – and his speed is just – you know, you don't find kids that can laser a 4.4. You know, I mean, people talk about it all the time, but that's not a lot of real not a lot of real talk, especially in high school.
That is insane. So, I mean, yeah, I've compared him a little bit to Jeff Thomas and also, you know, Percy Harvin, things like that. You know, Percy was the kind of guy that, like you said, with Burchard, you can line him up, you know, in the slot, in the backfield. Is there another player, you know, college or pro that, you know, is that you can kind of compare to Burchard's skill set?
You know, Percy was one of my top, you know, comparisons. But, you know, the Kamara kid that played at Tennessee and went to the New Orleans Saints. I mean, Burchard can do that kind of stuff because Burchard could play in the backfield. I mean, he's, you know, we've just been blessed to have, you know, some decent running backs. And Burchard's so elusive. It's just good to get him the ball now. And then he's also just tremendous body control in the air and great hands, you know, that not all running backs have. So, you know, Burchard is, you know, you look at him and people always want to classify a position. He's just an offensive weapon. I mean, they need to just create that tag for him because, you know, you could put him in there. He can run outside zone. He could run speed option. And then you put him in the slot. He can run jet sweeps, but then he's just out in the open field. I mean, it's tough to contain him.
Yeah. So I have a question for you, switching gears a little bit. We see it all the time. I think all fan bases are a little bit guilty of it. When a high school player that their favorite team is recruiting, he chooses a different school, it can kind of get ugly. You know, unfortunately, I saw some of that coming from the Miami Hurricanes fan base, geared towards some of your guys, you know, Jason Marshall and Corey Collier. I hate to see that, but I would love to hear your take as, you know, their coach in high school, you know, as someone who knows them personally, and I'm sure you probably feel some like stewardship over these young men. Would you give us that take? Because I would really love to see that stop, especially from Miami fans. And so hopefully I would like to use our platform to discourage that kind of behavior.
Yeah, you know, I think sometimes the fans forget these are kids. You know, these are human beings that have feelings and care. And you know, the great part about the kids we have, man, they're really good kids. You know, these aren't kids that are going to be getting in trouble and things like that. And I'm really close with my guys, and they call me all the time and they say, Coach, look at this. Coach, look at that. Look, why is this? Why is that? And I just tell them, guys, look, man, you cannot pay attention to social media, you know, but what you do need to understand is you see the influence that you could have, and you need to learn how to use that influence in a positive way because people are glued to what you're saying and what you're doing. But it's tough, you know, it's tough as a coach because you care, you know, you've raised these kids, you know, since they were young and you just, you know, you love them so much. I mean, you know, I'm to the point where, you know, I'm so upset we're not already out there practicing just because I want to be around those kids, you know, but, yeah, you know, the fans definitely, you know, I think, and here's the deal. Not all the kids are going to go to Miami. Not all the kids are going to go to Florida State. And it's my job as a high school head coach to give these kids opportunities. It's not my job to tell them where to go to school. Obviously, I'm going to try to help them navigate the water. But at the end of the day, you know, the parents and the kid, they've got to make a decision based on them. And a lot of times the misinformation, and you guys know this all the time, the misinformation that's out there by some of these recruiting services really paint number one kids' picture of like, oh, my God, this school has 9 safeties. I'm not going to go there. Or, oh, this team's doing this, or these fans are saying, you know what I mean? And it puts in these thoughts in kids' heads because kids, they're kids. They don't know. I mean, to be able to process all that information and still make that decision is tough.
Yeah. I mean, I'm 26, you know, and you know, when I think about my life, it's like I still don't know what I'm doing, you know. So if I try to remember what it was like as an 18-year-old and, you know, making the life-changing choices that some of your players are making right now, like, that would be tough, man. And I really just, again, you know, hope that this stuff discourages fans everywhere from just giving high school kids too hard of a time about these decisions they're making. I mean, because we don't know what's going on in their personal life. We don't know their family composition. We don't know anything. All we care about is which logo they're going to have on their helmet. And you know, it's hard not to be emotionally involved because we love our team, you know. But, you know, at the end of the day, when we're upset, don't point it towards a kid, you know. Point it elsewhere, right? I mean, do you disagree with me or
– No, I 100% agree with you. And, you know, it's – and I talk to my coaches because my coaches have a big influence on all these kids as well. And, you know, then a lot of the schools, you know, then, you know, they'll talk to my coaches too. And, it's just a matter of, hey, listen, man, these, whatever the kid's best interest is what's going to happen first. And everybody else just needs to relax, you know, and just, you know, stop taking this. It has become such a business, you know, and there is such a huge passionate fan, and we love it. I mean, college football is amazing, and I love the fact that there is this business and that these opportunity for these kids. But at the same time, they're kids, and they're going to make dumb decisions, and they're going to do things that they shouldn't do, and you know, they need somebody there to help them, not to sit there and bash them for what school they pick.
Yeah, absolutely. Okay, so I have two questions. The first one is it just popped in my mind, and I wanted to ask it before it left. It's going back to Burchard. So the offense that you guys run at Palmetto, how similar is that to Rhett Lashley's up-tempo spread offense that he's bringing to Miami?
Yeah, you know, in high school, it's hard to go up-tempo just because, you know, when you go up-tempo, you have to practice up-tempo. And high school is just really, really difficult. But we do try – everything we try to do is tempo. But a lot of the run concepts and a lot of the quick passing game concepts that Lashley has, we use. You know, that's why I think Burchard's going to be an easy fit. The terminology is obviously going to be different. It's something he's going to have to learn. But the concepts that Lashley's offense bring, we have a lot of that within our offense at Palmetto.
That's awesome. That's awesome. And so my second question is, so obviously 2019 was it was a hard year for the Canes, you know, 6-7 and losing three straight to end the year. But even after a 6-7 season, what do you think is drawing some of these recruits to stay home and play for the Hurricanes?
Well, the University of Miami is a huge brand, you know what I mean? And just living down here and being a part of it, you know, kids are drawn to that. And kids want to see Miami do well. You know, I was on an interview yesterday, and I was just like, football is so much better when Florida State and Miami are all great and going after each other. So, you know, Miami's not going to go anywhere. I think, you know, just the transition of coach to coach, you know, and you know, not winning and things like that. But what Manny's done by the consistency of the great defenses he's had every year and bringing in this offensive staff who has, you know, just been tremendous. You know, number one, they've helped, you know, they've done Zoom sessions with my coaches to talk about their new offense and what they're doing. They've done a great job, you know, recruiting the kids. The buzz is there. You know, they just got guys that have a lot of energy and a lot of passion for football, and kids are drawn to that. You know, kids want to be around guys that are going to, you know, supply that juice every day.
Yeah. And so, and obviously, you know, Miami brings in Rhett Lashley, you know, Rob Likens, Garen Justice, these three new offensive coaches. You know, how do you think that they're fitting in to the South Florida kids? And, you know, what do you think of their styles and their approaches in from someone in your position with, you know, your players being recruited?
You know, they have made it a definite point, the offensive coaches, that they want to get Dade County kids. You know, they've definitely made that a point that they're and even it's Manny's thing, obviously, but defense, Manny's been killing it with recruits, you know, the whole time he's been there getting in the guys. And that was another thing I want to say. They are unfairly bashing Rumpf over Marshall and these guys. I mean, that's crazy talk.
Preach, brother. Preach.
That's just – I can't even believe that's even – Rump's one of the best guys in this business. You know what I mean? And so I don't know. I mean, but anyway, going back, yeah, I'm sorry. I lost my train of thought because I was pissed off because Rump is a great dude.
Yeah. Yeah. No, that's definitely been a – that's definitely been a hot topic with Miami fans. But, you know, my point of view is that, you know, look at the past defenses that Miami has had since Rumpf has got there. It's always top 20, top 10. In 2018, we had the number one pass defense in the country. And so he's doing a good job coaching these guys up. So, I mean, that's my point of view, at least.
Yeah. So sorry, go ahead.
No, I'm just, you know, it boggles my mind. People that don't know, like if you've been over to UM to the practice field and you've watched the way that Rumpf interacts with his players and you watch the way he coaches, there wouldn't be a doubt in your mind that he's one of the best defensive back coaches in college football.
Well, so I have a question regarding a guy like Rob Likens. So when he comes into the program and he has the pedigree of putting a wide receiver in the first round of the NFL draft for 2 years in a row, Is that the type of thing that really jumps out at recruits, or how do these young kids process info like that? Is that a big sticking point?
You know, what's funny is I would say years ago, it probably was. It's just funny. These kids don't follow football like they used to, you know, like a lot of kids, you know, they're playing video games and they're doing that. And they're not, you know, some of these kids, believe it or not, may not even know who Warren Sapp or Ed Reed are, you know, but, but I think it's the relationship these coaches are building with the kids, because kids are drawn to that. You know, kids want to have a relationship. They want to be disciplined. They want structure. I think it's more so that than anything. You know, Likens did a good job of recruiting Palmetto when he was at Arizona State. I mean, those guys were recruiting our kids at Arizona State. So it was an easy transition over to Miami.
Yeah, that's awesome. That's awesome. And so my last question for you is, you know, as a whole, you know, with the coronavirus situation, and I haven't done much research on this. I know that that the high school association or whatever they have here is meeting a lot and talking a lot. What is your team's season looking like this fall?
Well, we haven't worked out since March. We've been completely shut down. We haven't allowed to have any type of workouts with our kids whatsoever. The FHSA said today that, you know, football can start on the 24th of this month, but the problem is Dade County is not going to let us do that. So we're kind of in a situation where we're just waiting, and it's been such a slow drip of information from our conference in our county that I'm not really sure. I mean, my kids, you know, I was posting workouts for a while. Then a lot of the kids were going and doing their own thing, which was good. And, you know, basically now it's just a wait and see. So, you know, everything's ready, man. I mean, we've got everything ready. So when that green light hits, man, we can get out there and get running. But, you know, there's some options out there. There's some options of us trying to get, you know, as soon as the numbers and the percent positive cases go down a little bit, there's some options of where we can get in and get into the state series. There's an option where we're not even with the FHSA and we just kind of do our own thing. Because if you've been down here any amount of time, if you went out of Dade and Broward and Palm Beach, you're pretty much a state champ. You know, I mean, we won 7 of 8 last year just in South Florida. So I just need the kids to have a season, you know, because we have, like I said, we have 7 kids committed to D1, but I've got 7 or 8 other kids that could be Division I players. They're just waiting to be seen. You know, they need the exposure.
Cool. Well, thank you so much for coming on, Coach. We certainly appreciate you. We're excited to have some of your guys come in and you know, send our best to Corey Collier and Jason Marshall. It bothers me that, you know, that they might have gotten some bad feedback from the Hurricanes fan base. So, you know, no hard feelings coming from the guys here at the Fours Up podcast. We want what's best for them. We know that they'll kill it wherever they go. So,
yeah. And Coach, yeah, we appreciate, you know, I appreciate the support you've given us on social media. Really enjoyed talking to you. So thank you again so much for coming on.
Yeah, no, definitely. And listen, Miami's still going to recruit the hell out of Corey Collier and Jason Marshall. You know, this thing's not over. You know, I tell people all the time, it's great to be committed, but nothing really sticks until that ink is on that paper. So, but yeah, guys, I really appreciate the job you're doing. Anytime you guys can promote our game that we love in a positive manner, I'm all in.
Cool. All right.
Sounds good. Yeah, give your players our best, and hope you and your family are staying safe during this crazy time.
Will do, man. Thank you, brother.
All right, Thanks. Coach. Talk to you later. Okay.
Wonderful, man. Two great interviews right in a row. That was fantastic.
Yeah, that was – I'm really glad that we had – I mean, John always does a great job. But Coach Manasco, like, that was a very, very good interview.
For sure. For sure. Dude, I love talking to John. He is the ultimate Miami Hurricane. Okay, we're back. We had minor – tech difficulties. My Wi-Fi died and dropped Marsh from the call. But I was saying, like John Michaels is just the ultimate hype man. And you know, I don't know if you heard this or not, Marsh, but I was saying I think you have that quality as well, man. I love talking with the both of you because nothing gets me more excited for Hurricane football. And John's just so incredible to have on the podcast for that reason.
Yeah, no, I've always felt that John was like he's in the same industry I'm trying to go into, and I feel like we're very similar. That, you know, we both try to carry a sense of professionalism, but you know, we still got that fan in us. So always love talking to John. But yeah, that Coach Manasco interview was just I was just that was awesome. You know, I'd love to talk to him more, and just the way that, and I loved your question and your statement about that the social media stuff, because and it obviously seems that, you know, that bugs him. And how couldn't it bug, you know, a head coach like that when, and even the Florida fans when Leonard Taylor committed to Miami, it's just,
just
immaturity on social media. I mean, grown ass men
for sure,
like talking down on these kids who are going a lot. And he said it perfectly. And I always say it on this podcast, is that people forget that these are 17-year-olds, like, and they're human beings, like they have feelings and everything like that. Yeah. And I love that you asked that. But something that was very interesting is I loved how Coach Manasco said that Miami is still going to, you know, recruit the hell out of Jason Marshall and Corey Collier.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure. You know, I didn't want to, when talking to Coach, I didn't want to say, you know, that Florida was terrible or whatever. I think the Florida fan base is actually a lot worse than we are in regards to that issue.
It's also, you know, bigger.
What was that?
It's also like they also have a larger fan base too.
Yeah.
So there's more idiots.
Yeah. Yeah. I think that they do. I mean, they're horrible, man. You know, I hate the whole, oh, Leonard Taylor wasn't even a take, you know, like he wasn't the best D tackle available, like just stupid stuff like that. Like it's whatever, you know. I just didn't want to, you know, put Coach in a position where he like had to agree with me that the Florida fan base sucks. But, you know, because we do have that in ours too, unfortunately. And, you know, I just want everyone to stop.
Yeah. Like, let's just be happy for them. I know, like, I had a, like, because I tweeted, you know, when Jason Marshall committed, I said, hey, best of luck, brother. I know you're going to kill. And I had Miami fans, like, getting mad at me. I'm like, like, what? Like, these kids, like, they've always been, you know, great to, like, nice to UM. They've been, you know, when I write articles about them, they always retweeted. They've always been really nice to me. And so, like, why wouldn't, just because they're wearing another jersey, like, I know it's the Gators, but, like, I want to see South Florida kids succeed. You know, I just want them to do well. And so I hate the mindset and the negativity that comes from some of these guys. And it's not just Miami fans. I think every fan base of college sports has this kind of have some negative people.
Yep. Agreed. And, you know, I'm a proponent of, I think there needs to be space for people to be upset about recruiting decisions. I just don't think we should point it towards the players, you know, because like I said, they're young kids, you know, like I get it. I'm very invested in recruiting. I spend a lot of my time looking into this stuff, you know, and so admittedly, when Jason Marshall committed to UF, like that affected my day, you know, like it made me sad. It was like a gut punch. It's like, oh, crap. I thought we had Jason in the bag. You know, but at the end of the day, I'm not going to get mad towards Jason Marshall because he's just doing his best.
Yeah.
You know, it's like, let's point it in a different direction. You know, I would rather people point it at Miami coaches, because at least they're being paid and compensated and they're highly regarded for the job that they're doing. But, you know, like just send it somewhere else into the universe. You know, like you can be mad, but don't like get confrontational on Twitter with a 17-year-old. Like it just doesn't make sense.
Yeah. And one more I wanted to note another thing that Coach Manasco said when he said Miami isn't going anywhere. That like gave me chills.
that was
awesome to hear that from a guy who coaches some of the best players in the country in South Florida. And even though Miami's been down the last 15 years, It just goes to show you that Miami, even after a 6-7 year, that logo will always hold weight. It will always mean something when you see the U. I mean, and that was awesome to hear, man.
For sure.
Yeah.
For sure. Okay, so, I need that.
Yeah. Go ahead.
No, you go ahead. I was just gonna agree with you. So.
Okay. So before we go, we got a question from Casey Nevejay. Friend, he's always been really nice to us on the you know, on love social media. Yeah, and so he posted a question the other day that I'd love to answer if you got the time.
Absolutely, let's hear it.
So he asked us. He said, going into the 2020 season, assuming we still have one, which we will, 27 days, he asked what position group will be most improved, which one regresses the most. For me, most improved will be a tie between O-line and our kickers, and most regressed will be linebackers.
Okay. Yeah, I think most improved will be our offensive line. And I agree with you there. I think there's a lot of angles to approach that from. I think we have better coaching now. I think we have better talent. And, you know, so that is getting a guy like Jared Williams, also giving guys like Zion and John Campbell more time to develop. Corey Gaynor getting a year older, Jakai Clark and Scaife, you know, them getting a year older and more time in the weight room and stuff like that. And then Rhett Lashley's scheme will also help. So I think there's a multitude of reasons why O-line will be the most improved. I like your pick of linebackers for the biggest regression.
Mm-hmm. Me, that was KC.
Sorry. Well, yeah. Then KC.
I was reading just the rest of his tweet.
Yeah, I got you. So KC, I agree. Well, I'm not sure if linebacker is my choice, but you make a great – that is a great choice. It'll be interesting to see if the speed at linebacker that everyone's talking about really makes the difference. I've long been a skeptic of people thinking that Zach McLeod will immediately step in and be better than Quarterman and Pinckney were. Because he was the odd man out for a reason. But I also kind of want to say wide receivers, man. I mean, we lost KJ Osborne and Jeff Thomas, but mostly KJ Osborne. and we really didn't replace that level of talent. Like, KJ was great.
Yeah, KJ was awesome. And just the thing that was most awesome was just his leadership skills. And that's the kind of guy that you wish that you could have at the University of Miami for all four of his years. For me, the position that will improve the most, quarterback. Let's say quarterback.
That's a great one. I didn't even think about that, but that's great.
It's because, like, honestly, for the first – up until the Virginia Tech game – even in the Virginia Tech game, Cozy threw for like 450 yards. But like up until then, Jaron was playing well. But like after that, you know, it was up and down for all the guys. And so I think the consistency of a guy like De'Ara King is going to be, I think people are underestimating it and not realizing how big of a deal that is going to be. And it's the position that has plagued Miami for the past 15 years, with the exception of Brad Kaye and Steven Morris for a few games. Yeah. but I think that receivers is another.
Ja'Cory Harris for an off season as well. Ja'Cory really two great. Two games in
2009, Ja'Cory Harris.
Yeah.
Miami legend. But I think you make a really good point for receivers too, especially with the arrival of Coach Rob Likens. I think it's going to make – and Rhett Lashley's playbook, I think it's a factor of simplicity that we didn't have in our offense last year that just makes it easier for wide receivers. I mean, Coach Manasco said it the best, is that just, you know, make it easy for the receivers and let them go and do their thing. And that's what we've been asking for and begging for from an offensive coordinator since, you know, the glory days. And then obviously the offensive line. When I say that we return all of our offensive linemen from last year, a lot of people be like, oh, well, they sucked ass, or, you know, they were horrible. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, people have to understand the position that Zion Nelson was put in as a true freshman, at the fact that they rushed his process. You know, he gained about 50 pounds in the offseason. And now after, you know, an offseason of building his body to an athletic stature as an offensive lineman, that's going to help a lot. And obviously Jared Williams, Coach Justice's, you know, leadership and coaching. And we say it all the time, but just the scheme of Rhett Lashley's offense is going to make it so that, you know, the quarterback is getting rid of the ball quicker. You know, we're not going to be drawing out these 15-second long play action fakes where we – and can we be honest, like, we blame so much on the offensive line, but when Jaron was doing a long play action and everything like that, that sometimes that's not the offensive line's fault. That's the play calling's fault. So yep. I think we need to recognize that. And then for the position that regresses, this is going to make me sound like a fanboy, but honestly, I don't see many position groups for us regressing to the point where it's like, wow, they took a significant drop down. I think linebacker will be interesting to see because, you know, we still don't know who's going to start next to Zach McLeod. And, you know, the other guys besides Zach are young guys, or they're either young guys or guys who have been injured for most of their career. But I think we're going to see a type of speed, athleticism, and quickness at the Miami linebackers that we didn't have last year. So I think early on, the linebackers may struggle. You know, that Louisville game is going to be very, very telling, about our linebackers. But I don't think that they're going to struggle. And I think a lot of that has to do with the pass rush that we have. I think that's going to help them out a lot. Because when you have, you know, a Jalen Phillips, a Nesta Silvera, you know, Quincy Roche, Big John Ford, linebackers can just roam free and get to the ball and attack the ball carry. And so, we didn't have the quickness and the speed from our linebackers last year that we were able to do that. So regress maybe a little bit, but it's by the end of the year, I think Canes fans are going to be very pleased with the way our linebacker room is looking for the future.
Yeah, I agree. I'm very – there's some trepidation, you know, for me, for our linebackers group. You brought up a lot of the reasons why. There's just a lot of – we're betting on a lot of unknowns. And, you know, our biggest tent pole for the linebacker position is Zach McLeod, who was not as good as – he might fit the scheme better, but – like I said, there was a reason he was the odd man out with Shaq and
maybe it was because of the scheme.
It could be. I'm not discounting that. But I'm saying, like, that's kind of been his whole career here, was like he was the third guy out of that group. And I don't want to sound like I'm hating on him, because, you know, I don't know. I hope it makes sense what I'm saying. I'm not trying to hate on McLeod. I'm just trying to slow people down. Like, let's pump the brakes a little bit on this linebacking group, because it's all unknowns, and the only known that we have is Zach, who I don't know. I would feel more comfortable if it was like Shaq, who stayed next year.
I love Shaq Quartman, and I loved what he was able to do at Miami. But at the end of last year, I think it was pretty clear that for this Miami defense, especially now that we add a striker, and especially with the way that modern offenses are going,
he was slow,
and he doesn't have the quickness that some of these guys have. I'm not saying that Zach. Well, remember when we did our first interview with our boy Ryan Roberts, who I think we need to have him on again and talk to him.
Oh, yeah. That's great. Let me interrupt real quick with Ryan. Have you seen his tweets recently about Brevin Jordan?
Yes.
They'll break your heart. I was so sad when I saw him. He has Brevin is tight end 4 right now.
Well, I think – and – but –
it's not a horrible take. It's just sad.
It's not, because – for Miami fans looking at Brevin, we know, you know, what he can do. We love Brevin. I love Brevin. He's actually one of the guys that because I have to do the media stuff in about an hour, and we're going to be talking to Brevin, Coach Field, and Will Mallory, and so I'm excited for that. But outside of Miami, you look at Brevin as a guy who has a good game every now and again, but he hasn't been consistent, and he's been injured. Like he didn't play after the Florida State game last year. And so, and even before that, our former offensive coordinator would only get him the ball about 2 to 3, or maybe once a game. And we were giving him jet sweeps on the 10-yard line on third and goal.
And he's just had very mediocre at best quarterback play besides one game. We got one great game from Jaron Williams, and the rest of his career has been mediocre quarterback play, if we're being honest.
Yeah, absolutely. And so, who's to say Brevin won't come back next year too?
He could. Like,
he very well could, because I think when he is healthy and when he is, you know, getting the ball, he is the best tight end in America. You saw what he was able to do against the Gators defense last year. You know, you saw what he did against Virginia Tech's defense last year, you know, a Bud Foster defense. And so when he is healthy and on the field and a target on offense, he's as good as anybody, and if not better than any other tight end in America. So that sucks that Ryan says that. We'll have to call him out when he comes on. We should have him on, like, next week.
Yeah, dude, let's reach out to him. I'd love to have him on. I'm a big fan of Ryan's.
Hell yeah. Hell yeah. But yeah, I mean,
telling me broke my heart.
Yeah, hey, but let's just, I mean, I think it's going to be a very, very big year for Miami tight ends. This is the season where the duo of Jordan and Mallory, we see it. Like, we see it come to fruition. Last year, I was saying that, 2019, like, you have no idea what you guys are in for when it comes to Jordan and Mallory. But obviously, that didn't happen, sadly. This is the season where I think it all comes together for Jordan as a superstar and Mallory as a guy who can prove to people that, you know, he can come in and, you know, be just as good. If Brevin decides to leave this or after this year and Mallory stays for his senior season, everyone knows I'm very high on Will Mallory.
Yeah. Well, the guy who does the groundskeeping at Greentree actually told me that Will Mallory is the best tight end he's ever seen, but nobody else knows it yet.
Yeah.
I'm just kidding. That was a joke. He's a Greentree all-star. No, I like Will too. I'm rooting for him to show it on the field. I give him a hard time more because I was just so frustrated with him, because I'm a believer too. I'm a big time believer in Will Mallory. But then when he just drops crucial passes, you're just like, dude, you know, like, come on, I know you're better than this. You know?
Yeah.
That's all it is for me.
No. And that's fair. But a lot of people don't, and I preach this all the time, but a lot of people don't even consider what he did when Brevin went out. You know, Will, you know, he caught a touchdown against Louisville, and he was good in the games that we lost. But because we lost and because of how Will's season started, you know, a lot of people just think that is the that's his product.
He'll be fine. And, you know, the following season when he's our starter and it's him and Larry Hodges, we'll still be fine because both those guys are really great too.
And I'm saying this right now. Elijah Arroyo and Khalil Brantley will see playing time as true freshmen. I 110% believe that.
Wouldn't surprise me, man. I mean, it might sound weird, but Larry Hodges caught as many touchdown passes as Will Mallory did last year. So
he caught the same amount of touchdowns in one game as Brevin Jordan did the entire year.
Yeah.
Brevin had two touchdowns last year. That, if that's not the greatest crime to tight ends in America, then I don't know what the hell is.
Well, you know, our biggest mistake was hiring a running backs coach to coach the whole offense.
Yeah, for just because he was QB coach at Alabama.
Ugh. I know. Oh man.
And we thought we were getting what the Alabama offense did in 2018, and what we got was Central Michigan circa 2013.
Yeah, right. I mean, it really looked like the San Francisco 49ers circa 1987, but without Joe Montana.
Hey, I mean, yeah.
That offense was older than I am, man.
Exactly. I mean, it was so bad.
Spread Coast, Marsh.
Spread Coast,
it's
my
It's so
ass.
Cool we had to make up a new name for it.
Yeah, it was so bad that I can't even say his name on this podcast. He's the Voldemort of Miami football. Someone tweeted that the other day, and it got a chuckle. So whoever tweeted that, I applaud you, sir.
Ooh, how about this, Marsh? If you had to pick one, there's no other out, so I'm not going to accept an out. If you had to pick watching a Cincinnati running backs coached offense or a Mark D'Onofrio coached defense next year for the Hurricanes, what would it be?
D'Onofrio defense.
Really?
Yeah, I would.
Oh, that'd be tough, man. Both were so bad.
That's the kind of question that there's no right answer to, because there is just two wrongs.
There's not. Both of them is the type of thing where you're just kind of – you're watching, you know, like – I know my football knowledge is based in video games. You know, like my knowledge of schemes comes from Madden and NCAA. So I definitely don't pretend to be the most knowledgeable guy when it comes to X's and O's. But I was sitting on my couch kind of scratching my head like, huh, that doesn't make sense. You know, it's third and goal. Well, it doesn't make sense to have your linebackers 7 yards deep in the end zone. You know?
Oh, my gosh. Yeah. It doesn't make sense to run a play action screen on your own 1 yard line, does it?
Yeah. It's like, oh, it's a goal line situation on offense. Huh. Maybe a reverse isn't the best thing to run.
Yeah, maybe you don't run, a toss right on the short side of the field. It's crazy that, because I don't pretend to be an X's and O's guy. But even if you don't know the game of football, like you could have looked at our offense last year and just say, well, that doesn't make a lot of sense. Yep.
It doesn't take our guy Roman Kane to understand how bad that offense was.
Yeah, absolutely. Hey, and on Monday, it's Roman's birthday, so an early shout out to Roman Kane.
Yeah, happy birthday, Ro.
Yeah, him and my boss Cam Underwood, another friend of the show, they share the same birthday. So
happy birthday, Cam.
Yeah, we need to have both those guys on the show again.
Can we get Ro on? Let's plan to have Ro on right after the UAB game, like, you know, one of the episode or two right after. I would really love to hear his thoughts on Rhett Lashley's offense after we've seen the Miami brand.
Yeah, absolutely, absolutely. And I think another we're just spitballing here. I think a good idea. If, you know, since we're doing like 2 to 3 episodes a week, before, you know, every game, maybe Justin from State of the U, who's been on the show, he does, you know, he has studied each of the offenses and defenses of every opponent that Miami is playing. Ooh. So maybe when we preview those games, you know, we have them on and kind of just get a look of
what we're our scout team, dude.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
And I mean that with respect. I'm not saying that to belittle him, but I'm just saying, you know, he's our scout look. You know, we have him on. It's like, okay, tell us what we're working with here, man.
Yeah, definitely, definitely. Oh, I had one more thing that I wanted to talk about. Okay, here it is. I want to do a thing. I call it the Mount Marshmore.
Okay. I like it. I like it already.
Mount Marshmore. What is your Mount Marshmore? Obviously, this is a topic of four instances. What is your Mount Marshmore of disappointing moments last year?
Oh, man.
You say one, and then I say one, and we can't use each other's. We can't say the same thing.
Okay.
That's a fun topic. Or should we do a Mount Marshmore of a happier topic?
No, I like this. I like this. Let's go. Shoot.
Can I just? Oh, isn't it?
Yeah. You know, honestly, even though Florida, you know, had a much better season than us, was probably a better team. Can I just take the whole Florida game? There were so many things. There was Jeff Thomas. There was, right at the end of the game. You know, when we had a chance to make it more interesting, Jaron blew a read, you know, and then Bubba Baxa as well. Like, can I just take the whole Florida game? Because there was so many missed opportunities. We should have – that was a very, very winnable game. If everyone just does their job well, we easily win that game, considering how Florida played.
Okay, I'll give you a pass this time. I'll let you use the whole game this time. So that's your number one. That's your first one. My first one is 4th and 17.
Oh yeah, that was a great one.
Yeah,
that was one of those movements or one of those moments where like you lose a little bit of hair. I lost like 4% of my total hair count.
Yeah, and I'm already losing my hair in school.
Me too, man. I couldn't afford to lose that 4%.
Okay, so what's your number two?
Greg Rousseau not being in the starting lineup.
Ooh, that's a good one. That's a good one. And I love Scott Patchen too. Great guy. And that sucks that Colorado State like is suspending their football program.
Yeah, I hope he can go somewhere else. Like, you know, let's bring him back.
Yeah, let's bring him. He might be fifth on the depth chart now.
That's fine. As long as he's okay with that. Let's not start him, but let's bring him back.
Absolutely, absolutely. Okay. Okay, what's your number three?
Jeez. I'm gonna say the Hail Mary during the La Tech game. Oof. That was when
Sharon was like running and like through like scrambling through the ball sideways or something like that. That was on my list. So
and then Dan, you know, running up the field, going, you know, running towards the tunnel, trying to get Jaron's attention. I said his name. But like just that whole sequence, including, you know, including Dan and Jaron after the play going into the tunnel. Like if they said in one video, less than 30 seconds, summarize the Miami Hurricanes season, I would show them that.
Yeah.
I would say, notice the score, notice who we're playing, watch this play unfold, and then watch our starting quarterback and our offensive coordinator interact right after. And that is the whole season that we had. Like that just perfectly wraps it all up in a bow.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that is perfectly said. And I'm gonna use this one for my number three. Another picture that sums up the 2019 season was the unlaminated play call sheet from our
I almost chose that one until I it was almost like it came to me like a daydream of Dan running down the sideline, Jaron.
Yeah.
Whatever,
that,
man.
When I saw that, because I didn't really watch that game because I was so disgusted from the week before against FIU I was going to the Utah game that day. And honestly, like I turned on the Duke game, saw that, turned it off.
Yep.
Okay. All right. Your last one. What do you got?
This one is more on a personal level. The Tate Martell experience, and I will go to, you know, him getting in the game versus La Tech for like three plays, and it just being a horrible, and then him hurting his ribs and not playing. Like, what a fiasco, man. Like, it was so hyped when he got here.
And just the way that fans...
Yeah.
Reacted to him when he had to take a leave of absence, and people still question that, which just blows my mind. But
yeah,
100%.
The whole thing was just a fiasco, man. And you know, it might just be that Tate isn't. I just have a hard time believing that he was fine at Ohio State. You know, like people are gonna say, yeah, it was Rutgers, but dude, would we have played Rutgers like that?
Yeah. No. Would Urban Meyer have recruited him or put him second string?
And that's the thing. He had literally a perfect game against Rutgers. I don't see any of our, you know what I mean? Like, it's not like I couldn't go out and do that. You know, it's not like Ja'Cory Harris would have done that.
Yeah. It's not all Tate's fault that the situation didn't work out last year.
So, I mean, that was just incredibly disappointing to me. And all the hype that came, I mean, dude, there has been quarterbacks that have been very successful in college football that are much less talented and athletic than Tate Martell. And, like, it just goes to scheme and coaching. Because, seriously, dude, our running back stable was loaded last year. I mean, Robert Burns looked good, you know? So we had three very good running backs. You know, I'd say two that are very good and then a third guy who could start on a lot of teams. I thought Burns was great. Why weren't we just doing run, like read option type stuff with Tate? You know, if our offense was that bad, which it clearly was because we scored zero against Louisiana Tech. Why aren't we just doing read options by that point?
I don't want to have an aneurysm on the show, so I'm gonna get into that.
I mean, we couldn't score against anybody, man. Like we couldn't score against Central Michigan hardly.
Yeah.
We couldn't score against FIU. So why are we not just running the ball every play?
I don't get it. I don't get it. So my last one on my Mount Marshmore of disappointing 2019 moments is Bubba Baxa's missed extra point against Virginia Tech that would have given us the lead.
Oh, gosh.
Yeah.
Last season was so horrible that I thought that was 2 years ago.
Yeah. I was sitting at like row 5 or 10 in that end zone. It was right in front of me. And I looked and one of my friends from Utah came with me to the game and I said, watch, he's going to miss. And doink.
Dude, poor Bubba.
It was a doink.
I feel so bad for Bubba, dude. What a horrible, horrible year.
Yeah. I want to point out, and by the way, I don't know if you liked this segment, the Mount Marshmore, but I kind of like it.
I like it.
We should get a new category to do on a show like once a week. But I will say that Jose Borregales was one of the ones that the media got to talk to the other night, and it was awesome because, you know, we're tight with Andy, his little brother, who's committed to Miami, and just hearing Jose talk, it was awesome. And one of the things he said was, you know, he was asked, you know, what are some of your goals for this year? And you probably saw the quote and goes like, my goal is to come in and help win an ACC championship.
Yep. Yeah, I love it, man. And so I just learned this a few days ago, but Jose has multiple Star Wars tattoos.
Really?
Oh, yeah, dude. He has on his calf, I believe, on his right calf, he has multiple symbols from Star Wars like lore tattooed up the back. And then Petrie shared a tweet with me, which shout out to Petrie. I think it was of his forearm or something. He has like the Jedi code tattooed on his forearm as well, you know, like the Jedi mantra. And so he's immediately my favorite player going into next year.
That is awesome. We need to talk to like compliance or someone and have him on the show.
Yeah.
And talk about that because that like made me like him even more.
Yeah. I love that man. So let's do it. Let's, we'll reach out to him and see if it works with school.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Okay. That was a great episode. They're all a great episode.
We can do no wrong as far as I'm concerned.
Absolutely. And we still need to freaking preview the rest of the games for this season.
Yeah, let's do that next episode.
Hell yeah. I'm all for it. Okay, cool. Is there anything else we need to talk about?
No, man. Good stuff. Just appreciate everyone and you know, looking forward to the future. So.
Hell yeah. Hell yeah. I love it. I love it. Okay, we will talk to you guys in a few days. And until then, go Canes.
Go Canes.
Forza Podcast.